Hello, my name is Rich Jones. I'm a co-founder of U-Turn and the Chief Clinical Officer of U-Turn Health, and I'm also a co-host of this wonderful podcast.
And my name is Liz, and I'm a co-founder of U-Turn and a co-host of You Learn, You Turn.
And let's get the show on the road.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of You Learn, You Turn. I've got two wonderful, wonderful women with me today. Mandy Keim and Aaron Krall. Dr. Aaron Krall is with us, who works with us at U-Turn Health. And Mandy is in the construction business and or sector. And she is going to tell us a little bit about herself and her work and mental health in her work. And I really just want to read her bio really fast. It's very impressive, and it'll kind of encapsulate the things that she's accomplished to date. So Mandy is a Central Washington University alumnus of the Safety and Health Management Program and currently serves as the Director of Safety for AGC of Washington. She also has a bachelor's degree in foreign language and teaches Spanish for supervisors in the construction industry. As if that wasn't enough, she recently earned her master's degree in safety and health management and published a thesis and employer best practice guide on mental health interventions in construction. Mandy has worked in AGC's safety department for 20 years, helping members with safety programs and working on legislative regulatory issues pertaining to safety. Mandy currently serves as the co-chair of the AGC of America Chapter Safety Leadership Committee and the National Mental Health and Suicide Prevention Task Force. As if she had time, she enjoys spending time camping and traveling with her family, including her 16-year-old daughter and 11-year-old triplets. Mandy was the only safety professional selected by Construction Business Owner for the 2019 class of top 20 outstanding women in construction from 200 nominees, and was featured in their November 2019 issue. Let's just all pause. All of that. Amazing, amazing. You could have stopped at triplets. You didn't need to say anything more. Welcome to the show, Mandy.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me. I love when people talk about the triplets because, frankly, I think being a mom of higher order multiples and many children, and nonetheless, they make me better at my job, and my job makes me better at wrangling the chaos.
I can only imagine. And how old are they right now?
They're 11.
All right.
I say that is 33 years of parenting experience compressed into 11 years.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Good times.
Well, Mandy, what got you into construction? How did this career begin?
So I grew up with a father who was in safety and in construction safety, no less. And I remember thinking, I want to do something that helps people. My mom was a nurse, and I was a little afraid of the idea of you know, poking people, prodding people. And so I was like, you know, I could probably do safety. And, you know, the good thing is nobody wakes up in the morning going to work thinking that they're going to get hurt. So it probably is going to be a pretty easy job. Little did I know. Little did I know. But I was really stubborn and headstrong, and I didn't want to walk directly in my dad's footsteps. I wanted to earn my place in my career. So I really thought that I was going to go into agriculture. However, opportunities presented themselves in construction back when I was in college, and my first internship was with AGC of Washington, and I kind of haven't looked back from construction ever since, and I'm really glad that I'm here still.
Wow. So you indirectly followed in your dad's, well, directly followed in your dad's footsteps, yeah. And obviously you love it.
Mm-hmm. I do.
What drives you today?
Yeah, what keeps me here? I honestly have to say I have seen the hearts and the ingenuity of our construction workforce, and I got to say they are the salt of the earth human beings. I love what I get to do. I love interacting with our construction workforce. You know, we don't always get a fair shake as far as how people in society judge the construction industry as being kind of rowdy. And, you know, oftentimes it's almost like, oh, well, they went into construction because they couldn't do X, Y, or Z, right? And And I think that that is completely incorrect. I think it's so incorrect. My grandfather worked construction, and there wasn't a single thing on this planet that he couldn't build or fix or solve. And, you know, as far as the hearts of our construction workforce, I have seen our construction community rally in so many different ways to make our communities better and look out for one another. And so I'm really proud that I get to work in this industry. I'm really proud that I get to represent so many amazing contractors and all of their workers. It's a gift to my soul. It's a blessing.
That's beautiful.
Erin, do you want to continue on and ask a question or two?
Yeah, I actually want to ask about, Mandy, if you don't mind, your thesis. When she was reading your bio, I'm like, oh my goodness, we need to hear more about that. So talk to us about the thesis work, about recommendations for best practice. That's huge. That's something that I feel like the industry needs so much more of. And not just in that space, but I think across industries is more of that how-to guide, right? We know that there's issues around mental and behavioral health within the workplace, but there's not a lot of what Elizabeth was describing in your bio. So tell us about your thesis. How do we kind of build off of that and continue the amazing work that you did?
Yeah, thanks. So kind of an interesting turn of events. I had a client come to me many moons ago. His name is Cal Beyer. He's pretty well known in the community. And He said, you know, you're doing good things with regard to safety, but were you aware of these statistics on suicide in our industry? And I really wasn't. And as someone who has struggled with their own mental health issues, and as someone who is in a high risk population, parents of higher order multiples are at higher risk for mental health struggles and suicide. And so it resonated with me, and Cal wanted me to really talk about it at the AGC level, and I jumped in, and I knew going into it, it was going to be controversial, but I also knew, like I said, I've seen the hearts of our construction workforce, and we want to do the right thing, but sometimes people just need a roadmap. Sometimes people just need a playlist to look at and go, okay, this is. You know, this makes sense. This resonates with me. And I knew after, you know, 20 years in the construction industry, and my role at AGC has been really taking the work out of rule compliance. And so the overarching theory of applying some best practices to mental health is really not a stretch once you've got some experience in that regard. So when I embarked on doing my master's degree, I knew that part of that was writing a thesis. And I knew instantaneously when I found this out that that's what I was going to focus on. And so I did. I published my thesis. It's 50 pages. I jokingly tell people I knew no construction employer or no construction professional was going to pick up a 50-page academic thesis and read that. I wrote the thing and I still don't want to read it, right? Like it's not entertaining reading. It's not a subject that really screams like, "Ooh, read me," you know? Mm-hmm. And so I knew that what I needed to do was take the core tenets, the nuggets out of it that are actionable from an employer perspective, and put that into a usable format. And so that's what I did. For every one of the 8 identified best practices in the guide, there's a little bit of statistical information as to why this is relevant to the conversation about mental health. And then there's links in that guide that take you to free and open source tools and resources that you can use within your workplace to deploy something relative to mental health. I also tell people all of the best practices are numbered 1 through 8, but that doesn't make this a linear process. It doesn't mean do step 1 and then go to step 2. What I hope is that people take a look at that resource and they say, okay, these are the 2 or 3 things that really resonate with me as a leader, something I feel comfortable doing within my workplace. And secondarily, that there's something I think will resonate with the existing culture within my organization. And so pick those things, do those things first, the ones that feel more comfortable and easier. And then as you grow in that comfort level of having these conversations, it's easier to weave some of the other stuff into what you're doing. And frankly, part of the reason why I did this as well is because there's a natural correlation between safety professionals, being kind of a liaison or a cultural change agent within their organization, and being able to take input from the field and turn that into program and policy. And so I felt like safety directors would be a natural starting point. What I found after developing this and putting it out is there was a handful of safety professionals that really wanted to challenge me, whether it was in presentations on the subject matter or in some of my posts on LinkedIn, where they're just like, hey, this is not a safety thing. This is not an HR thing. This is not a workplace thing. And what I say to those people is, yeah, it is. It's here. It's happening. In my state, we've had a number of on-the-job construction fatalities related to either suicide or drug overdose. Mm-hmm. So it's happening on the job site. And you cannot tell me that when something like that happens on the job site, that it doesn't leave an indelible mark on every other human being that was on that site that day, that has to continue showing up to work every day in a place where something so tragic took place. And unfortunately, we end up with survivor guilt. We end up with all sorts of struggles that happen because we weren't addressing this head on. And so that was really a key motivator for me as well, is just let's get in front of this. Instead of waiting until people are in crisis and they feel like the sky is falling and they don't know what to do, let's help them out ahead of time. And so a lot of the things in the best practices guide are really upstream things to really help individuals bolster their own resilience and also be more comfortable having these conversations.
Mandy, why the stigma? I mean, we, with U-Turn Health going into businesses and talking about this, even before COVID, to HR, they said the same thing, the same pushback. This is not something, you know, we talk about. If she wants to go home and drink after work, that's fine. But they don't understand the next day that she's too hungover to get most of her work done, or if she has a son who's addicted to pain pillars. Anyway, they didn't want to talk about it either. Why do you think the pushback, when it's so clearly happening, is it fear? Do you think that people will label that industry as prone to depression and suicide? Or do you think it's just they don't want accountability? Or I have the hardest time figuring out why the stigma still exists when the facts are there.
I think that society has contributed to this in a big, big way, in the sense that, you know, if someone's struggling with substance use disorder, somebody's having mental health challenges, society has a tendency to already write those human beings off. Society has a tendency to just, you know, oh, well, they're a failure. When in reality, every single one of us, it's part of the human condition. You can't get through life without having struggles, right? And as far as substance use disorder, no one of us as an individual is ever more than one decision, one catastrophe, one injury away from having these struggles. But it's society has told us for a long time that if you're one of those people that has one of these struggles, that it's somehow a failure of your constitution or your fortitude or your, you know, intelligence that you found yourself in this scenario, instead of saying, wow, man, that really stinks for that individual. And I know of some resources that could help, and I could be a lifeline to that person. I think also some of the stigma challenge that we have is just that these conversations are uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want to appear as though you are judging a person for what their struggles are. And when it's an uncomfortable or crucial conversation, mm-hmm. you know, I'm amazed, honestly. I've spent 9 years working in the professional space. I am amazed how many people have some modicum of professional success, but still shy away from the crucial conversations because of merely that they're uncomfortable. And so I think that's a struggle too. Mm-hmm. My viewpoint is how we break some of that stigma is that we start having people in the leadership roles be bold and vulnerable enough to share their story. I do that a lot when I do my talks. I say, you know, I've stood in front of work groups of 700 workers and given presentations and my palms don't sweat and I'm fine. But as part of my mental health struggles, I still have things that challenge me. I still have things that I have been confronted with. I struggle in grocery stores. Why? Because I used to have to buy copious amounts of formula and diapers and wipes, knowing that I didn't even really have the money to do it, but I had to do it because I had to provide for my kids, you know? And, you know, so I share about that and I say, you know, you look at me and I may come across as a polished speaker and someone who has had some career success. But I struggle and I have my triggers and I have things that I'm still working on. And so to that end, we look at people day in and day out. It's, you know, part of what we do is just place judgment on others. And we look at them and we go, well, I don't understand why they can't show up to work on time. I don't know why their work product is subpar. Instead of saying, I wonder what's going on here and if I can be a part of the solution for that person. And acknowledge that every single person that you encounter in this lifetime is struggling with something that they don't talk about and that they don't share. Yeah. And if we can acknowledge that, then when we look at someone who is struggling, clearly they're giving us all the indicators that they're struggling. Then when we look at them, we say, I wonder what their struggle is. And I wonder what it is that I can do in my capacity to help. And that totally flips the script.
It does. It really does. I always love that saying, there's brokenness behind every door. You might see this wonderful put together facade on the outside, but everyone has something, you know. Is there any experience you could share with us that's someone in your, that you've helped or that's gotten help, someone in construction, and you've seen them get help for safety on the inside, not just the outside, where it's been a success story that you could share with us? If not, it's fine.
So I'll start with a personal experience because I think that is powerful. And I think that it really speaks to some of the work that U-Turn is doing in this regard. And then I can talk professionally as well. But from a personal experience, and one of the things that I talk about in the best practices guide is just about employee assistance programs, how underutilized they are, but also how broken they are. My 16-year-old daughter, she's 16 now, but at the time she came home from school at 11 years old. And she said, Mom, I would rather die than go to school another day. It is still hard to talk about, but she's great. She's doing really good. She just started driving. She's going to be a teacher. She's doing amazing things in this life. But I share this example because so many of the people that we encounter have young ones in their lives that are struggling. And sometimes they're struggling silently. And not all of us know what to do with that. If a young person came forward to us and said, you know, this is too much. And I think we can all agree that the world that our young folks are living in right now is untenable. It's harder than anything you or I ever experience. And it seems like with every generation, it just gets a little bit more difficult. So she came home to me and said that she was struggling, went through some teacher issues, some bullying issues. And I reached out to the first resource. Now, mind you, I was already working in mental health in construction at this point. So I already had the beginnings of a roadmap. And obviously, I'm the parent, so I'm not in crisis. My child was in crisis. So I reached out to my employee assistance program. And they, you know, jockeyed me around here, there, and everywhere, and ultimately sent me a couple of articles about personal hygiene, nutrition, those kinds of things for my kid out. Oh, super helpful, right? The EAP, after a lot of wrangling, basically said, we don't have any tools or resources for people that are underage. So you should probably go see your primary care doctor. And that just really struck me because how many people are in crisis and they finally work up the nerve to say, I'm not okay and I need help. And they reach out to a resource that they've been told is going to help them and it doesn't. And what happens when it doesn't help? And what happens when they feel like there's nowhere else to turn? And because they're in crisis, they don't have all their mental faculties about them to navigate it. And I'll be the first to say our healthcare system in this country is disastrous when it comes to navigating, you know, what your coverage is, how to find in-network providers, and then also to try to find mental health support. You know, getting established care is difficult at best and takes months to do. And if someone's in crisis, like that's not a fair ask of us to have them navigate that alone. So I knew with that process, and I was really glad that through my research that EAP, came up as a subject to be discussed. And so I challenge people all the time, call your EAP, find out what they'll do. Find out what they won't do and communicate that to your teams and share that with your teams. Because, you know, in the moment of crisis, when somebody finally decides to reach out to the AP, that's not the time to be finding out that it's dysfunctional. And furthermore, again, we may not be needing these tools and resources for ourselves. We may be needing them for a loved one. We may be needing them for a coworker. But all of that to say, you know, if you don't know how to navigate the system's not going to serve you. And one thing that we can do as leaders is navigate the biggest piece of that for our teams by making those phone calls and knowing ahead of time what it will and won't do so that we're not expecting someone in crisis to navigate that. And then communicate it often, you know, let people know like, hey, this exists and it's free. You know, this is what we're doing for you. We care about you. We want you to be okay. Excuse me. So I would say as far as in the workplace, things that I have seen be very impactful as far as workers in the construction industry getting help, one of them is taking mental health assessments. And the reason why that is so helpful as a tool is because we don't often know that we're struggling. We don't cognitively realize that that is a sign that we're struggling. It may be something that we've dealt with our whole entire lives. It may be something like for me, I didn't realize that my anxiety was something that I had been carrying with me for as long as I had until, you know, all the walls came crumbling down and I had to kind of rebuild. And then I started really seeing how it manifested itself in my life over and over and over again. And so many times I was like, oh, I'm just stressed. And so taking a mental health assessment, and I've had people come up to me after, different sessions that I've spoken at where I talk about the power of a mental health assessment. I've had folks come up to me and say, oh my goodness, I took a mental health assessment and I learned all these things about myself that I didn't realize. And, sometimes that knowledge makes you feel so much more empowered in the journey for yourself. So I think that is critical. It's a great tool. And frankly, you can't really fix what you don't measure. So you might as well take an assessment and figure out where you're at. And so there's lots of free tools to do that as well. But I do feel like that is a really good starting place for employees to start their journey in mental health. And there's ones that are kind of a little bit more lighthearted and tongue-in-cheek, like mantherapy.org, where it's just, you know, it's very lighthearted. And so if someone is resistant to that messaging, that's a real easy, low-stress entry point to the conversation.
Well, switching gears just a little bit from the mental health perspective, but I feel like this podcast will, you know, we're hoping that lots of women in construction will listen and also women who are looking into the construction industry. What advice do you have for women thinking about this as a profession? Do you have anything you could tell them that would help them make a decision to dive in or not to dive in?
I think that the construction industry has grown in strides in this area as far as being an employer of choice for women. I will say I have been very fortunate to be in construction all of these years. I see a lot of opportunity here. And frankly, I know that, you know, my experience is not the same as every other woman in the industry. So I'm not belittling that in any way, but I have had a number of men in our industry you know, make space for me, celebrate my successes, promote the work that I've done. And so I don't think that it's quite as bad as some people let on. I think also as a woman in this industry, it's so very important for us to make space for one another. And, you know, I've alluded to this before, but the times where I've felt kind of alienated or excluded the most has been from women in our industry. And wow. So I really do feel like we've got to, you know, if we want to take up space in this industry, we got to make space for other women while we're doing it. And if you achieve any level of success in this industry, then you owe it to your peers to make that space and allow their voices to be heard and not view other women being in our industry as a source of competition, because there is room for all of us. And I think that part of what is beautiful about bringing a lot of different perspectives and people into our industry is we get that well-rounded diversity of thought. We get a lot of different experience. And through that process, by making space for others and hearing what other people have to say and soliciting their input in that process, we get better solutions to our problems. We get more engaging conversations and bonding because we're actually hearing each other instead of just listening so that we can respond. We're listening so that we can learn. And so I think that there's a lot of value in that and encouraging other women into the industry, but we also still have room to grow specifically in how we talk about construction, workforce. You know, construction isn't, the career path for people who couldn't make it elsewhere. Construction is a viable, very, very, a respectable career path. And how cool is it that people that work in construction get to drive through their communities and point out to their families and say, I helped build that. I was a part of that project. You know, I led that team or whatever the case may be, but you get to literally build your community. And that's so impressive. And we need to get back to celebrating that and the skill and integrity that is needed to do that kind of work. And so I think, you know, we've got to do better about how we talk about our industry, but also I think that there are some employers that still have a ways to go with regard to, you know, how they recruit women or how they recruit anyone into their ranks. You know, non-traditional approaches to recruitment result in non-traditional hires, and some of those people are the world's best problem solvers. So we've got to consider those options.
Mandy, I don't know, really, after talking to you now, all the different things that you have your hands in. Oh my God, you're so impressive and such an inspiration. And if we could just put you on a billboard, I think everyone run up to work in construction. I'm not kidding. Erin, do you have anything else you'd like to ask her? Because I feel like we've covered a lot, but also have so much more to talk about.
Oh, for sure. I have so many comments. First and foremost, you are absolutely incredible. And you've been through the conversation. I can hear the pride and the passion. And it's really refreshing to hear someone who's in this space where you kind of see things from different perspectives, right? Like I know you have this area of expertise in this safety and wellness, but you also kind of understand this unique reality from the industry space. And so I feel like, one, you're just incredibly powerful. And I'm so excited to stay connected and continue to see what you do. One of the questions that I'm thinking of as you're speaking, and you're telling your own story, but you're also emphasizing something that Liz and I have talked about with the whole U-Turn crew, is the power of storytelling and the power of being the person to tell their story as a way to enhance that utilization of support. And I see this a lot in law enforcement too. And there's some cultural similarities with that, like barrier and the stigma and the masculinity and all that kind of stuff. And I will say this from personal experience, my father was in law enforcement and he was a pretty high ranking law enforcement officer when he passed away. And I remember people thought of him as like this scary police officer in terms of like, you want to make sure you impress Captain Craw. And you like, when I was at his wake, they were like, I was terrified of your dad. He was like the best cop ever. And, you know, he like, they just wanted to be their best because they thought so highly of him. Now he struggled with things at home, like depression, post-traumatic stress, a couple of different mental health related challenges, and no one knew. And I think that there would have been so much power in someone like that turning around and saying, listen, I was still on the job. I was still able to make it work, even though I was struggling. How do we get more people to do that? Because I know you're doing it. I know a couple other people that we've talked to in the construction space, but it is not everyone. And there's such a barrier there, but there's so much value in it. So how do we get to the point where we help people? And maybe it's a training or a guide or something to help people kind of articulate their story and circle back to say, listen, here's how I know recovery is possible. So you don't have to have that label of like mental health challenge, you're done. How do we get there? What do we do?
Well, I'll start by saying I wrote an article for one of the construction publications on exactly that, the power and the importance of storytelling in the effort of mental health and suicide prevention, because it is critically important. I think that the magic key to this, which is also the magic key to getting the more resistant folks in our ranks to consider the value of conversation on mental health, is, first of all, we've got to impress upon these individuals how much impact they have, and how much, aside from telling their personal story, to just say, people look to you, people respect you, people want to emulate you. And that is a powerful gift that you have with others, and you've earned respect and trust. And so once they understand their impact, it's a lot easier for them to realize that their storytelling can be, it can be life-saving. They can be that person, right? And also, it matters with regard to our psychological safety and inclusivity efforts as well. Because if someone that we see in a leadership position opens up and says, I've struggled with PTSD or I've struggled with anxiety, and you look around the ranks of all of our people and they go, well, wait a minute, I have anxiety or I've struggled with PTSD, and that person is in a position of leadership, they now see themselves in a different light. They see themselves as able to have the same success or have a career trajectory like that individual. And so it builds that connection, but it also further helps validate them, because they're like, wait a minute, I thought that I was the only one struggling with this. And now I see someone that I look up to that has had these similar struggles. And so it helps us feel as though we're not alone in the fight. And they go, okay, well, if I was in crisis, that might be a good person to reach out to. And so I think it's really important for anyone who's struggled to figure out how to tell their story. But I think that's healing for us too. Right. I struggle to talk about my daughter's experience. I struggle still to this day, even though I've done hundreds of talks now on mental health and sharing my own personal story. I still struggle with it. But telling that story heals a part of me every time I do it, because it's me acknowledging that I went through it, acknowledging that I'm still going through it, and acknowledging that I have the power over it to continue to move forward, and that I'm not giving in, and I think that piece of the puzzle needs to be articulated to our folks so that they understand, like, it's powerful what you can do with your story if you learn how to tell your story properly. You know, it's not a stand up in front of everybody and go, oh, poor me, or, you know, oh, I want everybody's pity, but rather, hey, I've had these struggles. Here's how I dealt with it. Here's how my life got better. And look at me. I'm showing up to life every day and I'm doing okay. And you can too.
Love it.
So much power behind that. Yeah. And I do feel like the more that we can empower people to tell their story, the more that we're going to see that being a way to, like I said, enhance using resources, because if someone, and we've seen this in conversations across industries, if someone says there's a list of resources, and you kind of alluded to it too, Mandy, there's so much difference in that and saying, hey, I've used U-Turn Health peer coaching before, and this is my experience. This is what it looked like. Do you want me to share more with you? And I can tell you what the steps I took, because I'll tell you this, I know we on this call are not the only people that probably believe this, but when you are in crisis, you feel such a lack of control. So you want clear knowing exactly what's going to happen, what the process is going to look like, because one more unknown could push you over to being just so overwhelmed that you don't even want to get started. I mean, I personally have felt that way so many times. And, you know, even in helping other people trying to find resources, mm-hmm. like you have to sift through all of this information. And so if you're thinking about someone struggling in the workplace, they don't want to sift through that. But if they have someone who can say, hey, you know, I've struggled, I can't know exactly what you're feeling, but I can relate to that hopelessness. And I've done a couple of things. Can I share them with you? That's so different, it sounds like, than, and you've had experience with this from your story, than just saying we have an EAP. How far does that go, right? It's like, okay, awesome. I don't know what that looks like.
Yeah. And I think too, if you think about it, anytime you've ever had an emergency, right? You know, you cut your hand or you know somebody that has had a medical emergency and you've had to like dial 911 or anything like that, those seconds feel like hours. Mm-hmm. And so if you figure you're somebody in crisis and you're reaching out for help and you've got to call an EAP and they're going to be like, oh, you don't need to talk to this department. I'm going to transfer you to that department. And then I'm going to transfer you over here. All of that feels like you're in an echo chamber, right? Like I'm not getting the help I need. I'm getting shuffled all over the place. And the longer that takes, the more you spiral and the more out of control it feels. So if you have somebody that's willing to just take you by the hand and say, hey, you know, here's something that exists and I'm going to walk you through it and we're going to, you know, we're going to give this a try and see if it helps. You have not only the peer support or the camaraderie of somebody, you know, taking you under their wing and saying you're not alone, but you also have that ability to feel like, you know, the sky isn't necessarily falling. It's going to be okay. It's just going to take a while till I feel better about all this, you know?
Right. That hope and that recovery, I think, is just the emphasis of all of that, right? Makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, Mandy, it has been a pleasure speaking with you today. And I know this podcast, I mean, you're helping so many people, but I hope this podcast brings a light to anyone struggling and shows that there are ways to get better. There are processes and things in place now because of Mandy, because of Aaron, in the workplace. So go beyond your EAP and find out what your program offers. So there is hope. Aaron, do you have anything to say to wrap it up?
Other than just thank you so much for your time, Mandy. I mean, I've learned an incredible amount from you. I know all of our listeners will. And I think that keep telling your story, keep talking about these things and your thesis, gosh, what came out of that? And I wrote a dissertation, so I know exactly what you mean about the 50 pages. I think my dissertation was like 147 and no one is reading that ever. So that is so awesome that you created a very digestible document that people can work through. I think we need more of that. And so just continue what you're doing. And thanks for letting us be a tiny part of what you're speaking on. I can't wait to stay connected and just keep learning from you.
Yay. Thank you. I really appreciate it. If anybody wants any of these free open source resources that I talked about, please do not hesitate. Go to the AGC of America website. We have an entire page dedicated to mental health. You can find my best practices guide. You can find all sorts of free tools and resources that you can deploy for yourself or for your workplace. But, you know, arm yourself with information and be ready. And that's one of the best things you can do if you really want to start this journey, is to become informed, feel like you have some understanding of what's out there, so that if something comes up, you're ready instead of just feeling confused or overwhelmed by all of it.
Absolutely. I will definitely link that page in the show notes so everyone can easily find that, as well as your bio and your information. So with that, I will say goodbye, everyone, and tune back in for another episode of You Learn, You Turn. Thanks, everybody.